Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Control Alt Azure. I'm Tobias. I'm back again with UC. What's up?
Hey, Tobias. I am staying home this week. So it is MVP Summit week. And I think last year and this year, it's a hybrid event, meaning that if you can and if you choose, you can travel to Seattle and then attend MVP Summit in Redmond. And I was hoping last year to go, but the timing, it's super awful for me. And it's the same this year. I'd love to go, but the work obligations, family, and after COVID, I'm not too keen on the long distance travel. I used to go there quite a bit per year before 2020. And since then, to the US, not a single time. So I wish everybody happy times in MVP Summit. I will be joining remotely from the comfort of my sofa, but at least I get to have some red wine. And I hope people in there will meet it at Joey's and enjoy life. How about for you?
Yeah, I recall the days. I was also on MVP for many, many years, and it was always a good time to get over to Seattle and Redmond for the MVP Summit. I do miss some of that, kind of interaction with Microsoft and the product groups that we used to do. So I can only plus one on that. You know, I hope everyone have a really good time if you're part of the MVP community and you're heading over there. So that's awesome. Glad to hear it. Now, for me, kitchen renovations are on the table, so to say, and they're about starting in a couple of weeks. There's a lot of planning, but I've decided not to lift a single finger myself for anything this time. I will let the professionals do that, and I will focus on what I do best, which is not renovating. So I'm looking forward to an upgrade of life with the renovations, and it'll be a really nice kind of fresh experience with the new kitchen. So we're keeping some old parts and we're replacing a couple of parts and we're building a new a new floor, new ceilings, and it's going to be a minor but major upgrade. Like, we're keeping some stuff, so it'll be nice. So more on that in a couple of months. Apart from that, it'll be a busy spring and summer. There's a lot of fun activities with the family lined up, and also a bunch of parties coming this spring and summer. So I have a really good feeling about 2024. This year will be really great. So I'm looking forward to just jumping in and accelerate now.
Sounds nice, especially the kitchen renovations, because when you're in the middle of the renovation, it sucks. But once it's ready and you're looking later at the pictures during the renovation, you're like, was it really like that? Because it's so awesome now. Alrighty, today, Azure updates. It's been a couple of weeks since we last did this. We had a look at what's new in Azure, what's interesting, what are we looking at. We both have our list of interesting updates and releases. Let me start with something I know very little about, but this looks interesting, and I feel this is something people have been hoping and wishing for Microsoft to make available. So this is now generally available, Application Gateway for containers. So in essence, if you have Kubernetes-based workloads, you can use Application Gateway now to do load balancing and dynamic traffic management. In a way, this is the classic Application Gateway, but specifically for container-based workloads. You can do custom health probes. Are my containers up and running? Should I do something? You can do URL redirect and header rewrites. And also you can publish APIs through this one. There's some sort of an SLA here. I didn't deploy this in practice, but I had a look at the announcement and some of the technical documentation, and this looks fairly ready for production use.
I like that. It's good to finally see this coming out for containers as well. On my end, this is something that's in public preview that I want to highlight. It's the well-architected framework assessment on Azure Advisor. So if you know about the assessments on the Learn platform, we've talked about several of these in the past in various episodes. You can do the well-architected framework review assessment to make sure that you're aligned with WAF or the well-architected framework. And then you'll get a report saying, hey, there's some room for improvement over here, and you're doing these things really well, to kind of guide you on, you know, building your well-architected solutions and making sure you're designing things the right way, thinking about the right things. Now there's an integration coming with Azure Advisor. So again, public preview. This was announced on March 4th, so pretty recently. And I really like that. So the initial supported assessments as per that announcement are the mission critical well-architected framework review and the standard kind of well-architected framework review. So if you're running mission critical workloads, something that is very sensitive, you know, cannot go down, high availability, needs a ton of resilience and you know, all these things and you know, just need to be healthy at all times, that's a really interesting assessment to take, regardless if you do that from the Azure Advisor experience or if you do that from kind of the Learn platform. So I just wanted to highlight that because we have had a couple of conversations about assessment. I've had a lot of discussions with people reaching out and saying, hey, how do I know if I'm aligned to the cloud adoption framework or the well-architected framework or whatever it is? And then the assessments are really good to making sure that, you know, the thought process and how you work and how you design your things are actually aligned. So I'm happy about this kind of integration to Azure Advisor. It's a really good experience for the customers to benefit from this. So that's kind of my first update.
That's nice. I haven't had a look at that one. I think you mentioned this previously, maybe briefly, that it's something we should look into. And we've done plenty of episodes on a well-architected framework, but in the context of this one, definitely an Azure Advisor, this is probably something to spend a bit of time this spring. Next on my list, and this is in public preview, again, for Application Gateway. And I don't mean to sound as if everything I do in my life is about Application Gateway, but this is interesting as well. Application Gateway support for TLS and TCP protocols, meaning support for publishing non-HTTP-based applications. And Microsoft is outlining SQL workloads, MQTT and AMQP, fairly specific, I'd say, a bit for reporting and IoT-related traffic. I did try to find information if stuff like RDP is supported, but there's no mention of that. But definitely something I need to try out and test in here. And this is available in Application Gateway Standard version 2, but also for Web Application Firewall version 2 when you deploy that with Application Gateway.
Okay. So that's two app gateways, one after the other. So I've got something that is a kind of a retirement or deprecation message. And we have mentioned this in the past, and I will mention it again now because it was not too long ago, but I heard customers are still using cloud services, classic. I had a couple of former customers reaching out and saying, hey, we're running this, you know, do you have capacity to help? And I'm like, well, I don't do consulting anymore, but, you know, there's probably some people that can help you over here. And they explain that they're on cloud services classic deployment models. And those are retiring on August 31st this year. Okay. So if you're still on cloud services classic, and I don't know, you know, what the kind of justification is to still be using that, but there's always edge cases or, you know, things that's been running forever and it's going to take a lot more investments to try and build something new if the system is not that important, but it still kind of needs to be there. So for some reason, you know, people still running that. But if you are that, it's really time to migrate. So you can migrate to Azure Cloud Services Extended Support. So that is something that you need to migrate to before August 31st. So if you're on Cloud Services Classic, make sure you migrate to Cloud Services Extended Support. And the primary benefit of that is you get regional resiliency along with other features that now exist in Azure and Azure Service Manager. So that comes with RBAC, tags, policy. You know, it supports deployment templates and private links, bunch of stuff that you don't really have access to in a cloud services classic deployment. I have put a link to that in the show notes. make sure if this applies to you, if you're using this, make sure you follow that guidance no later than August 31st, or your cloud service deployments will be stopped, deallocated, and your data will be permanently lost, right? Because this is going away. It's not like we're taking a small break and saying, hey, you know, you have another 5 years to think about what you want to do here. This has been announced. It is going away. You need to migrate to the extended support option or just build something new. But I think the migration is the easiest kind of option. And again, I know I've said this in the past talking about cloud services, but it's getting real now. So if you know that you had this within your organization, or if you're in charge of some of these, you need to take action. You need to take action now. So I just wanted to highlight that as an update that came out in the Azure Update Center as well recently, saying, hey, this is a deprecation notice. This is going to happen. And because I know that there are some customers still running cloud services classic, this is getting real. This will go away. So make sure that you check out the migration path.
I wonder how many companies are still using cloud services classic, because there has to be a bunch of companies still utilizing this. Otherwise, it wouldn't make any sense to provide the cloud services extended support. It's been at least 10 years since I last saw this in production. I know they still exist, but if you're still there, do something today. Get rid of that.
Things happen in the cloud the last couple of years.
Yeah, indeed. Next on my list, this is interesting. Azure Elastic SAN is now generally available, meaning cloud native storage area network. And back in the day, before public cloud, SAN solutions obviously were the thing you would always build when you were building something in a cluster or in a high availability mode. SQL Server comes to mind. You would often require a SAN for that. So now this would be a capability, for example, for migrating your SQL Server clusters to the cloud and not wanting to utilize Azure SQL or Managed SQL or Microsoft Fabric, but instead let's do a lift and shift of this one, and we would require SAN capabilities in the cloud. 80,000 IO operations per second is the supported ceiling for this one, and 1,280 megabits of throughput can be guaranteed. Snapshot support. And the availability for this one is a little bit limited. So it says limited regions, but there's quite a long list of regions this is available. Sweden Central, obviously now, Western North Europe, East US 2, and so on. I did have a look at the pricing because I had no expectations what an Elastic SAN in the cloud should cost. The base unit that you need to deploy is €90 per month, plus about 7 cents per gigabyte per month, plus a meaningless amount per gigabyte per hour. And then you scale this with capacity units, which are €67 per month. So in theory, you get by with less than €100, which is about $100. Per month to get an enterprise grade Elastic SAN up and running in the cloud.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. Like for every update we read as we do these episodes, it's like, man, the future is here. And every time there's a new kind of innovation happening in the cloud and things are moving so fast, I'm always surprised. On my end, there's a public preview of Azure Storage Actions. And we did talk about that in the previous episode, I think episode 229. But I still wanted to highlight that here in case you didn't tune into the past episode. The Azure Storage Actions, they're really interesting. It's a way to kind of automate some storage actions that you want to take. You can scale out automations easily. You can assign the same task to manage storage accounts. You can kind of define, if this happens, then I want to take this action. And if this condition is met, I want to take that action. It's a really interesting thing, and it kind of expands on the storage lifecycle management stuff that existed in the past. It combines like a serverless infrastructure with a no-code experience. You can do all of this from the portal. There's also a way to kind of code it or define it by code, which you can see in the portal as well. It's cost-effective and reliable. and can run these kind of automatically scaled operations on your data. So you can really support your kind of data management needs. And those are kind of some of the selling points for that. But tune into episode 229 of this podcast, the past or previous episode. That's where we took a little bit more extensive initial look into what Azure Storage Actions are. So I'm really excited about these. I'm already trying them out on a couple of things, and I really like them. It's in public preview again, but it's available for you to try it in your Azure portal right now.
Good stuff. Next on my list, this is a fairly simple one, but interesting one. Windows Server 2025 public preview. So you can download the bits and run these locally, or you can spin this up in Azure. And when Windows Server 2003, 2008, 2012, 2016, when those came out back in the day, I was eagerly downloading the bits and deploying and tweaking and checking what's new in Active Directory and everything else. Now with 2025, I'm like, oh yeah, we still have Windows Server. This is probably useful for some scenarios. So obviously enterprises still rely heavily on on-premises AD and everything that Windows Server can provide for you. For me, I still have a couple of VMs running, mostly for testing. It's not something I really look forward to. I tried digging what's new so far. So this is still in preview. It does have the Windows 11 look and feel, meaning the new start menu and new wallpapers. This is crucial for servers. Something interesting in here is SMB over Quick, QUIC, which is essentially a more performant alternative to the regular TCP-based network transport. And this same capability is also already available in Windows Server 2022 Azure Edition, which you can spin up in production already in Azure. So what I'm doing myself, I'm giving it a couple of more months, then once Windows Server 2025 is a bit more mature, I'll definitely upgrade the single server that still runs Windows Server for me in production. I'll upgrade that with 2025, and hopefully it will give me a couple of more years out before needing to think about moving fully to the cloud.
I like this. Windows Server 2022 Azure Edition. It reminds me that I used to stand up Windows Server 2000 servers and Windows ME devices and all these things in my closet back home. Those were the good times. We did not think there would be an Azure edition at that time. Anyway, the next kind of update and final update on my end is about Microsoft Sentinel. There's a bunch of updates. There are plenty more updates than what I have time to read here today. But here's a couple of the really interesting ones that I found might be interesting for others as well. So the first one is data connectors for syslog and common event format, the Ceph format, based on Azure Monitor Agent. That's now in GA. So that's interesting. So if you use the Azure Monitor Agent, you can now connect that to Sentinel for syslog and these common event format. Now, something that's really interesting, if the other one didn't excite you as much, then maybe this one will. If you work with the Power Platform, there's now a Microsoft Sentinel solution for the Microsoft Power Platform available in preview. And that gives you like Power Apps execution from unauthorized geographies and insights into that. Suspicious data description by Power Apps. Mass deletion of Power Apps. Phishing attacks made possible through Power Apps. Microsoft Power Platform connectors added to the environment, so you can get alerts on that. Update or removal of Power Platform data loss prevention policies if anyone makes changes to that. So this is really fantastic news. I'm really excited about that because I used to build some solutions on the Power Platform and using Power Apps and things like that, but it was really hard to govern it. Now this is a really good way to not only govern, like it's still reactive in a way, but it gives you the insights that were really tricky to get at scale previously. So I really, really love that update. Another update is, it's also an interesting one. It's a new kind of Google PubSub-based connector for ingesting security command center findings. And the Security Command Center, that's the kind of Google's robust security and risk management platform on the Google Cloud. And now there's a connector for that, so you can get those findings into Sentinel as well. So, you know, keep thinking about the single pane of glass for security admins and for your SOC center to be able to kind of integrate and ingest all the data here. Incident tasks, I know we talked about that in a couple of episodes briefly. They're now in general availability, so that's publicly available and in production. And the final kind of interesting thing here is AWS and GCP. There's data connectors that now support Azure Government Clouds. So I think that is also really interesting if you work on one of these kind of protected or limited clouds, the Azure Government Clouds, then AWS and GCP have data connectors that now supports that as well.
Good stuff. This reminds me that we have to spend a bit of time at some point on looking at Google Cloud, especially on how you manage and govern certain capabilities through Azure to Google Cloud for a future episode. Last one on my list, and this is not strictly an Azure capability, but this is something that I find myself continuously needing, especially when I work with Azure and security, the Microsoft Graph CLI. So a command line tool for accessing directly to Microsoft Graph, so you can pull whatever data from your tenant once you authenticate. It utilizes an app registration, so once you give the consent for the scopes, then you can pull the data conveniently without needing to remember what was the URL for getting security incidents from Microsoft Graph. This works on Windows, macOS, and Linux. Fairly simple to use once the authentication and the app registration is in place. This is open source as well, and it's super fast. So what I'm using this for quite often is pulling different security-related data for demos and for working on that locally. And this is simply a tool for me to extract that data rapidly without needing to use Fiddler or some sort of browser-based thingy to pull the data from the REST API. I think those were everything we had. Have a look at the show notes. We have the links for everything we discussed here. The last bit is the unexpected question. So the past couple of episodes, we've had guests, so we've been asking this from the guests. But Toby, I do have a question for you, if you're ready.
Yep, I'm ready.
What's the absolute best kitchen gadget everyone should have?
So this is a funny question because I absolutely love kitchen gadgets. It's one of the things where Helena, my partner, she comes in and say, hey, look, what is this? And there's this random gadget in the kitchen that I'm trying out because I absolutely love getting kitchen gadgets. If there's one thing I do well, it's buy new kitchen gadgets. If there's one thing I do really bad, it's buying new kitchen gadgets. So to answer the question, there's a couple of things. Maybe there's two things I want to highlight. One is sous vide. So I had this sous vide machine I've had for 10 years. It's amazing. So I think that is something that everyone should have if you like cooking and if you like to make perfect meats or fish or, you know, even, you know, vegetarian food. You can do that using a sous vide. But I primarily use it for a really good piece of fish, sometimes for some kind of meat. But other than that, the even better thing is an automatic sauce pan whisker thingy. So it's a thing with batteries that you put into the saucepan. So sometimes I make a red wine sauce or whiskey sauce or whatever it might be, and it needs to reduce. And I do that at the same time as I have things in the oven. I might have things on the barbecue outdoors. And I, you know, got things everywhere. So I can't just stir the pot all the time. So there's a gadget that stirs the pot for you, so you don't have to do that. So that can sit in it, you know, for 25 minutes. And I know it's not going to burn in the bottom because there's a gadget just, you know, whisking the thing for me. So that is probably my number one kitchen gadget that everyone should have. That's going to be my number one. Automatically whisk your sauce.
I like the latter one. I do not have that one. I do have the sous vide thingy at home. We don't use it that often, and I recall we've been talking about this previously, maybe 100 episodes ago. The automatic saucepan whisker thingy. I need to go to the store and see if they have this. It's something I did not know I needed 5 minutes ago. Now I feel I must have it. Otherwise, yes, dinner during the weekend is not going to happen.
Yeah, no, you need to have this. Everyone needs to have it. So just run to your stores right now and ask for the automatic saucepan whisker thingy and see if they know what that is.
We'll definitely do. Alrighty. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
All right. See you then.